Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, it's Caroline from G-Thanks Just Bought It, reminding you that in between episodes, you can find me on Instagram at G-Thanks Just Bought It Pod. You can find products that don't make it onto the episodes and recommendations from listeners like you. So before you start this episode, give it a follow and say hi in the comments. And for a full list of every product we featured on G-Thanks, visit gthanksjustboughtit.com/episodes. See you there. Hey everybody, welcome to another week of G-Thanks Just Bought It, the podcast where we talk about what we just bought and what you might need to buy next. I'm your host, Caroline Moss, and today I am joined by a very special guest. Jessica Goodman is the op-ed editor at Cosmopolitan, and she is the author of the brand new, her debut book, They Wish They Were Us, which I read in one sitting. And it is so good. Jessica, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's so fun to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here. Now, if you somehow live under a rock and haven't heard anything about They Wish They Were Us, first of all, like, best cover ever. Best cover ever. So good.
I'm obsessed with the cover. When my publisher sent it, they sent, like, you know, comps of, like, what it could mm-hmm. be. I was just like, this is exactly what I want from a young adult thriller.
It is so good. It's like friendship necklaces with the words "They Wish They Were Us." The last necklace is with the word "us." It's broken. There's blood all over it. It's like a preppy flannel background. It's, like, delicious. So this book is, and Jessica and I talked, like, right before we went to record, and I was like, please tell me exactly, like, what I'm allowed to say, because one time I spoiled, like, a brand new book for a lot of people and still have nightmares about it. So, and Jessica, scream if I say too much, but basically the book is about, it's a prep school murder mystery. I described it to somebody as Gossip Girl meets Riverdale.
Perfect.
Yeah. Like, imagine, like, the elitism and the privilege of Gossip Girl with the, like, immediate murder mystery of Riverdale. And it is They Wish They Were Us. It's about a bunch of high school seniors. They're, like, kind of approaching this last final, like, epic year of high school. They are kind of moved on and removed from this extremely horrible, like, murder that happened when they were freshmen. And they all sort of have, like, moved on. And then all of a sudden, it's back to haunt them in, like, very Gossip Girly kind of ways. You did an amazing job. Congratulations.
Oh my gosh, thank you. I'm honored.
It's so good. And also some big news that came out, like, what, before the book launched? Do you want to tell?
Yeah, I think the Friday before the book came out, we announced that it is gonna be hopefully turned into a TV show, which is so exciting. Sydney Sweeney, who is one of the stars of Euphoria and Handmaid's Tale and Sharp Objects, she is going to star as the main character, Jill, and she's going to executive produce alongside Nathan Ross and Jean-Marc Vallée of the Big Little Lies team.
Insane.
So it's like kind of bananas. And this, like, incredible filmmaker, Annabella Tanzio, is on board to, you know, adapt it. And I somehow wiggled my way into getting an executive producing role also, which is really exciting. So it's just kind of, it's wild. It's just the coolest thing ever, honestly.
That's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I the feedback I keep getting is that people can, like, see it happening on the page, which
totally
is, like, the greatest compliment ever. So I have no doubt that these folks will make it, like, just such a gritty, incredible TV show, hopefully.
I think it's just
so exciting.
It's going to be so good. And my only request is that when it becomes a huge TV show and they ultimately do a re-release with the cover with the actual actors on it, tell them they can't because this cover is so good. They cannot change the cover. I didn't really know a lot about this before entering the world of writing books, but being able to like option, which is what it means to sell, essentially you sell your book to like a production company or a network and say like, okay, for a certain amount of money, and it's not a huge amount of money, for a certain amount of money, like you have like X amount of time to like do something with it, which means that like, hey, if NBC options this book, like Fox or ABC can't come in and be like, we want to option the book. Like NBC has 2 years to do something with it. In that 2 years, it pays you a little bit of money. For it to be announced before your book came out and for you to have scored yourself an executive producer credit is also like a little unheard of, because they usually just kind of kick the author out after that. They're like, we bought your book. Like, here's, you know, $15,000 or $20,000 or whatever, which is like, yeah, that's a lot of money. But it's not like quit your job and like, you know, buy an island money. It's like, oh, OK, like this is a nice, great stockpile. But it's really difficult to get yourself like also in the room, which is wild that you did that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an incredible opportunity. I'm so thrilled. This is certainly not my adaptation. Like, I think I will be there as like a supporting member of the team, but I am certainly not like the person writing the show or like coming up with the treatment or pitching it. But it is, I think, a testament to Sydney, who was like the first person to read it and want to work on the book, that she saw that there was value in having like the book's creator be a part of it. And so I'm like so grateful to her for that, because I have heard so many stories from other authors who've just been like, you know, they optioned it and now like I have no idea what's happening. And then, you know, 10 months later, like nothing happens, or a year later, like, and then all of a sudden it's just like over with and done with. So I'm very grateful for that. But you're right. I mean, we have been in conversations with these folks since May of last year. So it has been like such a long process and such a big secret to hold on to that I'm just like thrilled that we can like shout about it from the rooftops and tell everyone that it's happening.
Hollywood moves so slowly. I know that myself.
It's funny because publishing does also.
Yeah.
Like I have a couple friends. I mean, you live in LA, so I'm sure you do too. Like folks who work in the biz, mm-hmm. and they're always like, oh my God, it's so slow. And I'm like, you have no idea. Like I sold this book in 2018 and now it's coming out.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. We sold Hey Ladies in 2016 and it came out in 2018. And we were like, wow, that's so far away. I mean, obviously in between you have to write the whole book, which is another story. But like, yeah, I mean, they're like, that's why I'm always so surprised. Well, I mean, I don't even want to spend too much time on this, but when it was announced that like Cuomo's writing a book about like COVID, like that is the fastest turnaround. Also, I know he's obviously not writing it. I don't know what he's going to say either, but it's like these things take years.
I know. I started this book in 2011, like when I was in college. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't working on it like the whole time until I got an agent and, you know, sold it, but I worked on it a little bit in college and then like didn't think about it for 5 years and then picked it up again and like tried to turn it into a book. So it's been just like a really long process, and to see it come out now and like have people actually like read it and engage with it, it's such a strange feeling, but so mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's incredible that it was something that you had kind of come up with the idea like almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, I was in like a YA writing fiction class in college, and we had to like come out of the class with, I think it was like 50 pages of a novel.
Oh my God.
And like an outline for how to finish it. And the like Jill Newman, the main character, was always there. Like the secret society of the players was always there. Mm-hmm. And it was always like a prep school on Long Island. And there was always a murder, but of course it evolved, and I think the writing got better as I went along.
Of course.
And I actually like learned how to structure a story. But yeah, like the basic idea was always there. So it's, yeah, I've just been like noodling around on these characters forever.
Impressive. So that's even like I'm sure you did not dream of releasing your debut novel in the middle of a pandemic, but as we were talking about earlier, it feels like people are reading more than ever. Like It's an escape. I watched all the TV there was to offer between March and May. I have nothing left. I'm moving on. But that actually leads me to my next question, which is that, you know, how do you structure, and like, you don't have to give the academic answer, but like, how do you write a mystery? Like, just how do you do it? Because I don't know. This question is for me.
Specifically. I mean, I would love to have like a whole like lesson plan about this, and hope maybe one day I will. Mm-hmm. For me, I think like the big thing about a mystery is like, okay, so there's like one big question that you like pose very early in the story. Like for my book, it's like, who actually killed Shayla Arnold, which is like Jill's best friend who died when she was a freshman.
Yep.
Because like you plant the doubt early that the person who they think killed her actually didn't. So like that's like the central mystery of the book. Mm-hmm. But then along the way, there are tons of little mysteries and like smaller questions that also need to be answered. And I think that that's what keeps, like in all mysteries, that's what keeps readers like actually turning the page and mm-hmm. wanting to know what's going on. Because if you just have like one mystery and let's just say like, you know, the payoff like isn't actually that great, or like you figure it out really early, like you still want something that readers are interested in learning about, like whether that's these kind of like mini mysteries that run throughout the book.
Yeah, but that's so hard.
It's really hard. And it's really hard. And it takes so much trial and error. Like, my agent and my editor are geniuses, I think. And they're like at every stop along the way in the process of this, like they helped me make the story so much stronger. Like, and I think I always kind of describe it like this, like in the beginning you have like a coloring book that's like not filled in anywhere, you know, and it's just like the outlines of stuff. And then like, as you go through, like your editor and your agent kind of like help you like color in and like make it more full and more real. And like, there were characters and plot lines that like didn't even exist when we sold the book.
Mm.
So it's just like, it really is like a team effort. It is not like one person, or at least for me, it's not like one person like coming up with every single part.
That gives me a lot of hope, because I'm a like a classic like first drafter, where I'm like, if it's not like so close to perfect, the first draft I hand in, it's worthless, and like I need to learn how to move away from that. But
it's so hard, because it's hard. Like you're just like, especially a book, it's like what, 80,000, 90,000 words sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like you have to like believe in yourself enough to have this unbridled confidence that you can one day get there without having like any kind of payoff. And it's kind of like, I mean, it's an absurd thing to think about if you think about it like that. But then you know, I think you kind of need like a couple people along the way to be like, no, there's potential here. Like, actually, what if you did this? Like, I think this would really help it. So, I mean, I'm like so not a proud or precious writer. Like, I okay. will hand over like crappy drafts to anyone who will read them and be like, help me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the thing, is like getting rid of that preciousness and, you know, the old killing your darlings or whatever, and being okay with being like, this book might not be exactly what I imagined it to be, because it's going to be better than that, rather than being like, no, the first idea I had was like the one and I refuse to deviate. When you talked about payoff, I'm reminded of how bad the payoff was in Gossip Girl, the first mystery, which was, why did Serena come back? And, you know, what happened? And Gossip Girl's been over for a while, you guys, so I don't care about spoiling this. So, but basically, like, she was just nearby someone who overdosed.
Okay, So I'm just asking because we literally just started rewatching this show, because my fiance Maxwell was like, why does everyone keep comparing your book to Gossip Girl? What is it? And I was like, are you kidding me? And we're like around the same age. Like, I'm like, what rock were you living under that like you weren't aware of it? And he was like, no, I've like heard of it. I just like don't know what it was.
Sure.
Anyway, we started rewatching it. So now we're like, I mean, he's like, in which is great.
Okay.
But we're 5 episodes in. It's very problematic, the show. But I thought the mystery, it's very problematic, but I thought the central mystery was why she left, and it was because she slept with Nate. Again, don't care about spoilers.
Don't care about spoilers. So okay, so she did sleep with Nate, but it's not really why she left. It's so that's the thing, is like that's like the so if I'm giving notes, if I'm critiquing Gossip Girl, so they pretend like the Nate thing is the reason, And at the end of season one, you find out that she and Georgina had witnessed. Do you remember this now? They did some coke with like some guy in a hotel, and he OD'd, and she kind of internalized that as her fault when it wasn't her fault. Like, it's just not, it's not good payoff, because you as the audience, like, you're like, Serena, it wasn't your fault. Like, you really didn't do anything wrong. Like, you shouldn't have been doing drugs, and like, it really sucks that your drug dealer died and OD'd, and like, all of you should go to therapy, but like, you did not kill him. And if you have like half a brain or understanding of how drugs work, like, you know, she didn't kill him. So I feel like that should have been inverted, where like, I would have loved the big reveal to be like, you're a shitty friend and you slept with your friend's boyfriend.
Those are great edits. You should become an editor.
Thank
for
you.
Alloy.
I seriously, like, I would love to go back in time, sit in the writer's room in Gossip Girl and be like, I have an idea.
Wait, I recently had a friend who shall remain nameless who told me that she like tried out to write Gossip Girl.
Whoa.
And I like needed to hear everything about it, and she couldn't remember a lot, which was very upsetting to me, because if anyone who's like listening to this was a ghostwriter on Gossip Girl, like, please get in touch. I need to learn everything about that.
We have questions. You need to come on the show, or you can just talk to us, you know, one on two. We just want to know things. Is Maxwell enjoying Gossip Girl? Who are like, what's his stance? Who are his faves?
Well, he's really bad with faces and names.
Great.
So he like can't really remember anyone, but he remembers who Chuck is, because he was like, that man is just a Chuck. Like, he looks exactly like Chuck. Doesn't understand who Nate is every time he's on the screen. He's like, who is that person? Understood immediately that Blair was a bad person. So that was good for our relationship.
Okay, go ahead.
He's horrified by it all and is enjoying it, which is, I think, the intended reaction.
I'm so glad. It only goes downhill, unfortunately. The first couple seasons are really strong, and then the last couple seasons make no sense. Like, nothing.
Yeah, I think I only watched like the first three seasons, which I feel like is what I will rewatch. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's like, after this, we'll have to go to the OC, because together they are like they are the king and queen of the, you know, that era of TV for
now,
me.
Now, so. When did you graduate from high school?
2008.
Okay, so Gossip Girl was like truly your, that was like a high school show for you.
Yeah, I think it went into college for me, and like, that's when I stopped watching.
The OC started my junior year in high school, so like, I was in college when Gossip Girl came out, and I remember being like, yeah, that's New York. Like, I went to college in Massachusetts, and like, I immediately became like the cool New York person, which like says a lot about what people kind of, you know what I mean, like, some people, oh wow, you're from New York, like, no, I was from the suburbs. I wasn't very cool, but like, there was this is Gossip Girl like your life? It's like, yeah, for sure. And that's why I'm here in Massachusetts.
Yes, I also eat like $50 grilled cheeses from the Plaza Hotel.
Yeah, correct. I also like, right, I had martinis when I was 15. That was also, you know what? The way that they show underage drinking is like a very big, you cannot underage drink like that in New York, at least not in my world.
Not in my world either. yeah. I could talk about Gossip Girl forever.
So could I. We'll have to have another show. And then, did you watch Riverdale at all?
I watched the first season of Riverdale.
What did you think of it, knowing that this was already sort of your book, and you wanted to write YA murder, and that you had already started writing YA murder, when YA murder and murder in general over the last 10 years became like a trendy thing? Did it kind of give you the push you needed to keep going, or were you like, oh my god, what if someone steals my idea? Like, where was your head at through like 2011 through 2018?
You know, I never thought like, what if someone steals my idea, because I think so much of like, every story has been told before,
right?
I just like, I believe that, and I think it's like kind of about the way you tell it. So I was like, you know, if someone doesn't want to buy my book, it's probably because of like my writing, maybe, and like less about the plot is like kind of how I was thinking about it. I have no idea if that's right or wrong, but I do think obviously there's been such a surge in like true crime, and especially like true crime stories or thriller stories that are aimed at like young people.
Mm.
But I think the way that they've been told in the past, like however many years, has changed dramatically. Like there is such an emphasis now on centering survivors and victims' stories in a way that there just like wasn't when we were growing up or in the past when, you know, you think of like the classic mysteries that you could buy at the grocery store or whatever. They were more about like the detectives and the people solving the crimes and like the heroes of the story. And something that I'm really cognizant of, especially because I'm writing like for young women, I think, and about young women, is like, how can we make sure that the people that who have like the people who've suffered are actually having their voices heard and that they're portrayed in a way that makes them real people instead of just like the dead girl trope, like the beautiful blonde who just like died and like it's more about like, you know, like the kind of like gross toxicity of that. You know, obviously, like I want to make sure that we're also centering the voices of those who like survived and are grieving her. But I think that that like awareness is just something that's somewhat new in the genre. It's just been a real, like, I mean, it's just something that I'm really like sensitive towards when I'm writing, or try to be.
Yeah, I think you absolutely nailed it too. Because when I was reading, I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was that felt like, I knew, I was like, oh wow, we didn't have anything like this growing up. Like, I don't remember any sort of story that was so, I think, covering like such advanced material for young adults where like I knew about that stuff, but I wasn't reading books about that stuff because they were like, oh no, kids can't read about that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there was, it was like this sheltered sort of this thing. And I got a lot of like Veronica Mars vibes from it too. In that it did, there were, you did see the victim's story, play out on the page, and it wasn't necessarily just a composite of the people who survived her. Which I thought was like a really interesting way to do it. And now that you say that, it's like, oh yeah, obviously that's what it was, because like those stories weren't like, dead girl trope is like a real thing. And it's easy thing to do.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a reason why people want to read about it. Like, it's just trauma porn. It's why like everyone is so obsessed with true crime, I think. But I think the stories that do center the victims and the survivors and give them more voice, like those are the more interesting stories. Like those are the ones that actually are compelling and like make you want to keep reading. It's almost like, instead of getting like a quick hit, you know, you're like actually like diving deeper into a story. I mean, that's like what I want to read. Like that's who those are the authors who I gravitate towards. The ones that, that do that really well, I think.
Yeah, you're right. And yeah, it's very easy to read a story where you automatically know who's bad and who's good, like very, very quickly. It's way more interesting to read a book where everyone's sort of multifaceted and you can't really make a decision about anyone. And also like bad things happen to people who have done bad things. And that doesn't mean that that person deserved it. And I think that like, you know, even still today, like as a, you know, as like a society, as a culture, we tend to like really, really romanticize dead people. And like, you can have been like a bitch and also still have been murdered. And like, that's horrible. Like, you shouldn't have been murdered. But like, I think we're very quick to be like, and she was so nice and she was so amazing. And like, we can't speak ill of her. And I think a lot of books like in the past really were like also afraid to even traverse those lines like in a fiction way. And I think it's like way more interesting to be like, hey, this person might not even be super likable, but like a bad thing happened to them, and like let's learn how to like empathize with that or want justice for that person without also agreeing of like with every decision that they made while they were alive.
Yeah, I mean, they were like real people.
Right, exactly.
And real people have flaws, and that's what makes them interesting.
And I just think, yeah, we haven't done a lot with that in books, and it's really cool that this is not only a book that does that, but it's also a book for young people that does that. Before we take a break and go on to our product picks, what are two other books that it's like, okay, you read They Wish They Were Us, you loved it. What do you recommend in your own genre now to read?
Okay, well, there are like so many incredible young adult authors right now doing this kind of story. So if you like this book, there are like so many incredible options out there. The one book that I am obsessed with that's coming out in September, so probably around when this will air, is a book called Grown by Tiffany D. Jackson. It also has an incredible cover. And it is inspired by the R. Kelly allegations.
Wow.
And it's about a young woman who lives in Westchester. And she's a young Black woman. And okay. She is an aspiring singer. And she goes on this tryout for like a voice type show. Mm-hmm. And one of the judges is I think he's 27 or something, R&B star, and he's extremely popular, like R. Kelly level fame. And, you know, he grooms her into a relationship, if you can even call it a relationship. And it is, the book starts, I don't think this is a spoiler because this is how the book starts and this is how it's pegged. The book starts with him dead and her waking up with his blood on her hands. And it is an incredible story. So compelling and horrifying and extremely empathetic. And I read it in one full sitting.
Oh,
like 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Like, could not put it down. Tiffany D. Jackson is incredible. All of her work is stunning. She has a couple other books that are in this vein, and it's remarkable, honestly. That's what I would recommend. Okay. Also, a few other authors that just are similar, like Courtney Summers is incredible. She has a new book out that's like, I haven't read it, but it's coming out next, I think in like April or May or March or April or something, called The Project, which is about like a cult. And her book Sadie is like a podcast true crime book that's really good. Kara Thomas's The Cheerleaders is amazing. It's based on the Dryden murders, mm-hmm. in upstate New York, about a bunch of cheerleaders who are dead, and it's murdered, and it is she's amazing also. But YA thrillers are where it's at. Like, there's so much good stuff coming out in this area.
I'm making a note to read all of these, especially Grown.
I think you would feel like so affected by it. And her other book, Monday's Not Coming, is it's also just, it's about like young Black girls who live kind of like, they're not super well off in DC, and they one of them goes missing, and her best friend is the only person who believes that this girl has gone missing. And I think it's inspired by all of the missing girls in DC, mm-hmm. like all the young Black girls who go missing and like nobody looks for them.
Mm-hmm.
And in Monday's Not Coming, the main character is like the only person who believes that her best friend has disappeared. And of course she's right. And in a devastating way. Anyway, Tiffany D. Jackson, everyone go read all of her stuff.
I'm going to buy both of these. And I'm also, I bought They Wish They Were Us on my Kindle, and then you had sent me a Galley, and I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, well, I'll pre-order Grown, but I might also flex my my press privileges and be like, please send me early copy now. I need to read it like yesterday. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that is very okay. I'm making a full list. Monday's Not Coming is her first?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Or actually, I mean, she has a couple others, but I think Allegedly is her first, which is also great. But Monday's Not Coming and Grown are my two recs from her.
Building my TBR pile. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with our product picks for this week. Okay, we're back. Jessica Goodman, author of They Wish They Were Us, op-ed editor at Cosmopolitan. Do you sleep? Like, do you ever take a break? What's up with your schedule?
I sleep a lot, or I try to.
Good.
I think I'm just, like, not that social these days.
Well, who is? I think it's...
Who is?
And
who
you're, is? Are you're wedding planning right now, huh?
Well, we stopped wedding planning.
Okay.
Because of COVID, which we've talked about. But, yeah. We were supposed to try to get married June 2021, and I think we were lucky enough to realize before we signed a wedding contract that was probably not going to happen, so we just kind of like put it off.
Are you thinking that you might want to do something smaller or intimate and then do a big party later, or do you want to save everything for the one and done?
I think we're not opposed to anything, but my family lives on the East Coast and his family lives on the West Coast. So we're kind of like not really into the idea of doing something like one without the other.
Totally.
And are not interested in like asking one family to somehow traverse the country. So TBD.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's smart. You would be paying for that forever. you would be, you would never live that down. It's smart.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's, it sucks. I can't even imagine. You know what sucks more though? Like people who are still going through with their like massive weddings. I try not to judge, but I'm judging. That's crazy. Massive weddings, not small, like safe ones.
I'm not even trying not to judge. I'm judging. Like, did you hear the story that's going viral in Maine?
Yeah.
I just saw someone died and she wasn't even at the wedding.
Yeah. Tell everybody this headline.
It's basically like, I think in Maine, it's like you can have a 50 person indoor wedding with masks, which also is like bananas to me. But someone threw a wedding with 65 people indoors and something like 40 people at least got COVID and one person died. And a lot of the cases weren't even like connected to people. Like they weren't even people who were at the wedding. They were like secondary and tertiary contacts.
So like, it was like a big super spreader event.
A big super spreader event.
Cool.
Yeah. And just like, I don't know, change your wedding plans, dude.
I just can't imagine that you're like, and I get it. Like I already had my wedding. I can't talk. I understand that it's probably very painful to have been slated to get married this summer or this past spring and like everything's off the rails and all the money is in flux and like it sucks. Like I would not wish that on my worst enemy. But there's another part of me, and everyone I know, like for if anyone's listening being like, oh my gosh, she's subtweeting me. No, I don't know anybody who did not handle their wedding plans responsibly. But I did write something for the Today Show a few months ago, where like a bridesmaid wrote in and she was like, my best friend like will not cancel her wedding. It's like in September, there's like 160 people going. Like she's like, this is my day, blah, 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 blah. Like, can I get out of it? And I basically was like, yes, you can get out of it. You know, we're in a pandemic. Like it's gonna suck for your friendship, but like this isn't about you and it's not about her. It's about like not wanting to kill anybody or be killed. And I got so many angry messages from brides to be being like, I mean, like my friends and I had this a group chat going where I would send them all these screenshots, but like I got all these messages that were like, you have no idea like what we Corona brides are going through. And I'm like, okay, I wrote, hey ladies, like I see you, I get this, I invented making fun of you, but I was like, wow, like, and this was also around the time when the protests started sparking and like it was huge unrest and I mean obviously that's still ongoing, but this was like it was the first week where everyone was speaking up and companies, and there was like the downfall of all these people and everyone was being called out for past racism and like just things were starting to happen, and still I was getting these messages that are like, this has been harder for no one but me.
Oh my God.
Like I am suffering. God. Like I want my wedding. I've dreamed about this my whole life. I'm like, I get it. But like, you know, I just can't imagine, like bride brain is so crazy that like, what if you were like, having my wedding and then you're the reason why someone died? Like someone, that's you actually know, thinking. Like it's crazy.
Yeah. Just have some perspective.
Right. Like it's you're not going to look back on your wedding happily if someone dies. I'll tell you that much. You're never going to look back on that and be like, I loved that day. That was that was the day we killed Aunt Mary. Loved it. It was amazing. My favorite day. Yeah, there like you will never. I don't know. I experienced, and I don't know if this is like normal or if I was just really tired, but I experienced like postpartum like wedding depression.
That's real. We've done stories on that at Cosmo. It's okay. A real thing.
That makes me feel better because I was like, why? I wasn't sad that it was over, but it was like, it's like when it's like, I'm like, it's like my, running a marathon. I imagine it is like running a marathon. I'll never know. But like you're done and it's like, whoa, okay.
Well, honestly, like the day after my book came out, I like felt really depressed. Like I cried a lot and like couldn't explain why I was crying and they were not happy tears. Like, and I full on had like a depressive meltdown. And I'm out of it now, but I it's real. It's like the same thing of like, well, I released this thing or like I had this big event and like, now what?
Yeah. Now what? And like, you have that date. And I felt that with Hey Ladies too. It's like you have that date on your calendar for so long that you can't even imagine that there's a day that comes after it or you kind of imagine that day to last like six times as long as any other day. And it just isn't, it's a day like any other day. And then it's over. and you also, similarly to writing a book too, you want like feedback from people. Like you're sitting there and you're like, oh my God, like this thing that I like put out into the world is now in the hands of all these people. And it's like so hard not to text everyone you know and be like, so do you like it? Do you like it? Do you think I did a good job? Was it good? Is it good? Like,
also, like, it's a book which, like, you know, it's not a movie. It's not like going to take you an hour and a half to get through. It's like some people take like a really long time to read.
Right.
And I was like, tell me your thoughts.
Right.
And it's like, well, people probably won't get back to you for a while.
I mean, I loved the book so much and I did read it really, really quickly the day that I got it. And I was like, I have to tell her I loved it because I remember how it feels to sit there being like, is it too soon to ask people if I love my sister? I don't know if she's listening, but my sister like notoriously has not finished Hey Ladies, which is, and it's been out, it's been out for like 2.5 years. I don't think she's ever gonna finish it, but she's like, I read it up in probably until like, you know, the April or May chapter. I'm like, okay, great,
that's amazing.
I don't take it to heart too seriously, but yeah, like there, you know, I think that I get it, like, you know, you hype up your wedding. I can't imagine someone being like, now you can't have it. You've planned everything and now you can't have it. But I also can't imagine someone dying at your wedding and you waking up the next day and being like, it was worth it. Like, don't care. And I just, okay, fine, whatever.
There's some sort of like horror movie in here that I think needs to be written. But I mean, just nightmare.
When do
Corona
you...
bride, right. That's what they're calling themselves.
Yeah,
they need to get a grip.
We brides of Corona. When do you think we're going to see our first kind of onslaught of like pandemic content in books and movies?
You know, I was just on a panel this weekend with a bunch of other YA thriller writers, and that was one of the questions. Like, are you working on including COVID or pandemic stuff like in your stories? And we were all just like, absolutely not, like have no interest in going back there, like not a thing we're interested in doing. But I know you are like an Ellen Hildebrand
mm-hmm. Stan,
like Stan for sure. And didn't she include something in like her most recent book about this? I haven't read it, but I've heard extraordinary things from you.
Yeah, well, right. Yes. So it's actually something she brought up too during our interview, was like, so I got a galley copy like back in February, and the funny thing about her book is that like it's called 28 Summers, and at the it covers, every chapter is a summer. So in the beginning of each year, it's like, what's happening in this year? So in like 1996, it's like, you know, actually, what, why am I talking like I know what that is? Like, I don't know, JonBenet Ramsey, or like Hillary Clinton, Monica Lewinsky, like, you know, all these different things, like this hurricane, that hurricane, like this World Series, this Olympics. And then you get to March 2020, which is the last chapter in the book, because most of her books have something that call attention to like, you're reading this in this specific summer and we're talking about this specific summer. So you could be like, oh, I'm also in this summer. So her March 2020 thing was like, we're talking about the election. We can't stop talking about the election. The election is everything. The election is everything. And as I read it in March, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so weird when it comes out in the summer. And it's like, we were not talking about the election in March. And she said, because she didn't have, it's just like one paragraph in the book. So she was like, I called my editor immediately. And I was like, I know all the galleys came out and had this, you know, we're talking about the election, but like, we have to change it.
I feel like you can pull that off if you're her. But
yeah.
But I will be very surprised, not surprised, but I think I'm just not interested in reading anything about this time.
No.
Right now, maybe I'll feel differently in like 10 years when the trauma has passed.
Maybe.
You know, but for, especially for people who, you know, I'm so fortunate. I haven't lost a loved one from this like disease at all, but mm-hmm. I mean, obviously so many people have, and so many communities are disproportionately affected. Like obviously, their reaction to seeing it in, you know, in pop culture, like I have no idea what that might feel like.
Yeah,
but I'm not interested.
Right. And right, like what, who cares about what I thought, even if it is fictional? Like what, I don't, like whatever story I would come up with pandemic related is not that interesting. And like, what a privilege, like, to be able to be like, I'm gonna write a story about the pandemic that we just lived through.
I'd love to watch like a documentary about how it ended. Like, you know, like but no thank you. I don't need to like write a YA story about like children in masks.
I hope people can look back at the weird onslaught of like 9/11 movies that came like way too fast and think like, that was a mistake. Like, let's wait on that. Like, wasn't there like a big, I don't mean there was United 93. Like, there were so many like weird, like,
yeah, like, I remember so vividly going to see it. 9/11 happened when I was in sixth grade, and I lived in the suburbs of New York and Long Island. And I remember so vividly going to see a 9/11 movie in eighth grade with like my eighth grade boyfriend and all of his friends, and we were all like, so romantic. But we all just like walked out of the movie like silent as like 14 year olds, like, I don't know, and just don't. It's not something I'm interested in.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, similarly, I was up in Westchester, so we were like, you know, sandwiching 9/11. And I was in ninth grade. And I remember, like, you know, the Nicolas Cage movie came out, and then there was that Robert Pattinson movie that, like, ends on 9/11, which is, like, really weird. It's like they zoom out and he's, like, in the towers. And there's, like, so much masturbatory, you know, like, nationalism embedded in that kind of stuff. And it's like, it just. And it's like, it, I don't know, it pretends to be about victims, but it's like mostly about like jerking off to America. Like, I don't know. And it like makes money, and the money doesn't benefit anything but the studios. And like, I just think that that would be a nice case study for like no pandemic. Someone did announce a pandemic movie, though. I'll have to Google
it. So many.
Right.
Like, I keep seeing like Deadline articles about like so-and-so sells like a coronavirus story, like, oh, this or that or whatever. Yeah, I don't know.
Truly bad. Okay, so we've somehow covered 9/11. We got from murder to 9/11, so I need to know what you brought. This is a true surprise. I told you I trusted you. I was like, don't tell me what it is. So okay, let's hear it.
I hope you're not disappointed.
I will not be disappointed.
Okay, I have brought with me a box of note cards, the box is broken, but it's just a totally like standard plastic box of note cards from this company, American Greeting Cards, which is like a totally generic greeting card company.
Sure.
But these are so beautiful and fun, and they're just really standard neon colored note cards in lots of different colors with matching envelopes, and they come in boxes of 100 note cards and 100 envelopes for $15.
Nice.
And I bought them when I was starting to release, like, give out galleys to people, and I wanted to send handwritten notes to people. And I just like have kept this box forever, and now I send out note cards in like any kind of mailing. Like, I think I sent you one with a final copy of the book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sending them out to people who I'm sending like stickers with the They Wish They Were Us cover on it, and giving everyone, like, I have a whole stack of envelopes here.
Wow.
That are just like so pretty. So the reason why I wanted to bring this is obviously there is so much focus on the United States Postal Service right now because of the way that it's being defunded in such a grotesque way. And everybody is like, buy stamps and send mail and like support the post office. And like, we 100% have to do that. But I feel like so many people only buy like $6 papyrus cards that are just like exorbitantly expensive. And like, you can't do that on a mass level. And I come from a family that like really believes in thank you notes and like physical cards. Like, my mom sent me a little package of surgical masks that she like got from her doctor and wrote like a handwritten card on personalized stationery. Like, that's like the kind of family we are. Like, everything comes with like a little personalized card.
Yep.
And so even if you can't afford to like buy your own like personalized stationery, or it's like not your vibe, having a box of like 100 really fun neon note cards is just like, it's like the greatest. Like, you can always send a letter to someone, and like, what a gift to receive a piece of mail. I just like really love it.
I can't even imagine that you would think I would be disappointed by this. It's such a good recommendation. And it's true. Cards are like so expensive. And then you also have to like go out and get them. And we are not going out. And
people buy them like one at a time.
Right.
And it's just like not, it's just not useful. So American Greeting Cards, American Greeting, not American.
American Greeting.
Okay, American Greeting.
Looking it up right now.
Yeah, they sell like, so I have the neon ones because I think they're the most fun, but they also sell like pastel colors, and they sell like one with like fun scalloped edging, and they're all like $115, which I think is like a pretty good deal.
Is this the same American Greetings that you would send like an e-card to?
Might be. It's just like AmericanGreetings.com with like the rose logo.
Okay, perfect. I love that. Yeah.
They're called the Neon Rainbow Blank Flat Panel Note Card and Colored Envelope.
These are really great. And I think that's really smart. I need to do this because I have forever been like a really bad card writer because I never remember anyone's address and I don't like store it when I have it. And now I'm trying to get into the habit of like putting people's addresses in the contact in the phone. And then I have it, but I'm making life a lot harder for myself. But like, this is so nice. And also like, what is better than getting mail, especially now?
Like I'm sure you too, like all my friends are like far flung all over the country right now. And like, of course we text and FaceTime all the time, but like, how nice is it just to like get like a surprise note in the mail that's just like, hi, I'm thinking of you, and like a little like doodle or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like really sweet.
And it doesn't have to be like a whole like, I am writing to you with my quill and ink, like from the war. You can just be like, hi, like you're pretty, bye. And then like, that's it. That's fun.
It's fun. And having like just a big stack of these around just like never makes it seem like a big deal. You know, it's just like, I always know that I can like have these here. Or even like, I mean, especially for like professional stuff where like sending a neon card is like totally appropriate. Mm. It's like, I just like love throwing it in something, you know, like I was like giving my agent like a t-shirt or something that I got for the release of my book, not to be like super extra, but I was just like, let me just like throw a note card in there and like I'll be able to like write something sweet on it. And I just think it's like, I don't know, there's like so many ways to not be thoughtful these days, and it takes like so little effort to just be like, this like tiny piece of colorful joy like might make someone smile, and like that's a nice thing to do.
That's really nice. No, I think that's really great. And also if you read Rachel Wilkerson Miller's Just Good Shit blog, she recommended getting a postage scale, and you can like print your own stamps. Like you can just buy a ship and click, and you can buy like all this stuff. And then it's like, I think a lot of people, there's a lot of barriers to entry for post office stuff. And I know that we're all like standing the post office right now, but let's not forget there's not a person on this earth who hasn't gone into a post office and like wanted to cry because like the line is so long. And like, I get it that the people are mean because they're totally underfunded and under resourced. And it's literally like, it's 2019 and you're walking back in time to 1994, like that's the kind of software they're using. So like the post office is rarely a good experience, but you can, it's also 2020, like you can just get all of this stuff at home and then like be done. Like you don't have to go into the store if you don't
I mean, it's so frustrating right now because I'm sure so many people are trying to figure out how to like get their absentee ballot so they don't have to like go to the, you know, the polls in November. And like my biggest barrier to that right now is like, I don't have a printer and I need to print out a piece of paper to apply for my ballot.
Yeah.
So it's like, I have to, it's just like one more thing that is between me and like, you know, doing this.
Yeah.
And I will figure it out. Like, I think I have one friend in my neighborhood with a printer. or like you could, like, there's like a, you know, a sandbox place where I could like pay $1 per sheet to get printed. But, having stuff in your home that makes it easier to do these things like eliminates that barrier to entry. It's just so silly in like 2020 that this is like that a printer might stop you from voting.
I have to say, okay, so you know what? I had a totally different recommendation and now I'm going to change my recommendation on a whim and say my recommendation is get a friggin' printer. Okay? And I say that to everybody.
If any of your listeners like have a recommendation for a printer, like I would actually really love that because I was looking on Wirecutter and they had some, but the ones that they had were like not that affordable. Even the most affordable one, I think it was really big. And like I live in a small New York apartment. Like I can't have like a massive like $19.99 printer. And then my friend has like a really cute sleek one, but it was like $400. And I was like, well, I can't do that either. So if anybody has a printer rec, I need one.
I will tell you, I'm not kidding. I'm going to tell you now. This is going to be my recommendation. So we have this printer. So also, depending on where you live.
Oh, you have one.
Yeah, this is, I'm telling you, like, I have a printer and I've had a printer for a long time. And I remember also being like, you know, you start a new job and they're like, print, you know, you got to print this and sign it. And you're like, to print it? Like, you literally are, like, also typing into Google, like, where do I print? Like, just buy
printer. I've been visiting my parents, like, for a very socially distant outdoor lunch situation, and I literally was like, oh, I should probably have my mom print my absentee absentee registration ballot.
So here's the printer that I am going to recommend. This is the one that I have. I think I bought it. I think Dan bought it off Craigslist like a long time ago. It is not fancy. It's a little bulky, but like you can also just like shove it under your couch. You know what I mean? Like you can find a place for it if you're not using it all the time. I just leave mine out on my desk. It's the Brother HL. L2, I'll send you a link, 300D monochrome laser printer with duplex printing. Who knows what that means? It's $70.
Wait, that's a great price.
Yeah, it's a great price. It's exactly how much you want to pay for a printer. The thing about printers is that, like, we are no longer in third grade, so, like, you don't need a color printer. Like, we're not doing, like, reports. Like, no one needs to print anything that's, like, in color. And the reason why printers get so expensive is because color ink is expensive. So you want a... Who's listening, and I'm telling you now, Jess, like, you want a laser printer. It's just, like, black and white. You can buy paper... you know what? This is a thing that California does really well. Dollar stores are so good in California and not great in New York, but I think they sell things online. I bought like 3 packs of like, you know, 50 pieces of paper for $1. And like I print something like, you know, twice a week or like once a week, maybe. But when it's there, it saves you that whole entire weekend of like the pit in your stomach of being like, I have to print something. I have to print something.
I know you tweet about this all the time of being like, I have something on my to-do list that will take 5 minutes.
And I'm never going to do
it. It's been there since 2017 and I'm never going to do it.
Yep.
That's me with printing stuff. So I think, I mean, you've just influenced me to buy this.
I think you need to do it.
But you're right, because like I feel like my idea of like what a printer is either like the enormous machine in my office, which mm-hmm. like obviously I'm not going to anymore. Or, like, my parents' printer from when we were little that had, like, all of those, like, crazy ink cartridges that I knew were very expensive and, like, did not want to invest in.
Yeah. You want the printer that you, like, slide the piece of paper and it's, like, doo, and it comes out. Instead of the one that's, like, I'll do my song for, like, the color printers are, like, da-da-da-da-da-da, like, it's coloring it. Like, you don't need that. Like, you'll never have to print anything on color again. But you might want to print a label. Like, if you're returning something, like... Oh my God, worth the printer, the $70 printer is worth its weight in gold if you ever return something from online.
I mean, I was that person that like brought would bring enormous packages, like pairs of shoes to my office
yep.
so I could print out the return label and like do it there.
My big fear was always that they would have like a especially at a company where I had to use my ID to use the printer. Like you had to I always like feared that they would like be like, wow, Caroline printed like 19 Nordstrom returns. And that is during work hours. And that is not work. That is not work. I mean, yeah, that's what office printers are for. And if we were living in a world where we were going to the office and, you know, getting our money's worth on the big LaserJet scanner, copier, printer, you know, I'd say, sure, don't buy a printer. But having a printer at home, especially when we don't leave home anymore, like it is going to pay for itself. And just not being stressed about having that item on your to-do list and being like, now I have to cross several rivers to like get to find a printer. And it's going to cost me like $3 yeah. every time I want to print
yeah.
something.
It's true. And like I have like tons of envelopes,
right?
You know, like I have everything I need to like mail something mm-hmm. that you would put like a normal piece of paper in, but no paper and no printer. So this is going to be really big for me, especially because like, yeah, I have no plans to go back to the office like anytime soon.
Right.
And we'll definitely be using more paper.
It's right. Exactly. It is. I mean, just absentee ballots, like forms, your taxes, like stuff that you're like, okay, I need a hard copy of this, your lease, just like.
With book stuff, it's like so many author friends, like I know they're always like posting pictures of like their printed out books and like blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where did you print that? Like, you know, when they're like doing edits and like moving yeah. stuff around on the floor, I'm like, well, first, that's like a great Instagram photo.
Right.
Like, thank you for showing me your process. But also like. literally, where did you print that?
Where like, did you print go to that? Kinko's? Right, like, Kinko's.
I couldn't print that at my office. Like, I don't know. So now this is gonna be a game changer.
I'm telling you, like, I'm gonna buy the note cards because, like, I want to get better at just sending really informal, like, hi's to my friends, especially everyone in New York and whom I miss, and to my family, and especially because we're not going home for holidays. I want to send holiday cards this year, and like, I have to just get on the bandwagon and like, you're like, but it's literally like, we're basically recommending the same thing, which is like, it's a very easy thing that, like, if you just put it on your desk, like, then it's there and you will do it. Like, there's no barrier to entry anymore. The printer is seriously life-changing. And I would say that, like, you should look on Craigslist first, because there's always somebody giving away a printer. It's like, I'm moving, I need this out of my house by like tomorrow, or like, hey, this is $30, this $900 printer is like $60 or whatever. But if you're just looking for like, I just want the box to show up to my apartment and I don't want to finagle with Craigslist, this thing's $70. It's not like the prettiest. It's not going to print like the best. If all you needed is for forms, exactly.
Yeah, it's like, I don't need, like, you know, an aesthetic printer. I just don't want it to, like, be the size of my television or my, like, you know, just like to take up so much space. Totally. But I just want something that, like, yeah, will make sure I have the forms.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. We are not done talking about printers.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Okay, we're back. You know what I also just realized too with printers? Remember, like, being in middle school and high school and, like, your friend's dad, who, like, was really into all the gadgets, had, like, a printer that would print from his Nikon digital camera. So he would take a picture and then immediately print it, and you'd get to go home with, like, a picture of you and your bud. And that's not what printers are for anymore. Like, we're not printing photos at our house with, like, the HP printer. I think
no, and I know that there are, like, great little printers that you can, like, hook up to your iPhone and get, like, an Instagram size photo or whatever. I also don't want that. Like, right. I don't need that.
You just want something that's like, hey, I have to print this thing or this label, and that's it. And it can come out crooked, or, like, it can come out, you know what I mean? Like, you're not, like, we're not looking for perfection here. Wow.
I know. When I first learned that you could, like, sign stuff on Acrobat or, like, DocuSign, yeah, without, like, printing something in and, like what, like, or printing something out, like, I would literally, like, print something out, like, somehow, I don't know how, like, sign it, take a photo of it, yes, and, like, send it in, like, to someone who needed my signature on something, and I was like, cool, I'm the least professional person in the world.
A million steps in between. Yeah, it's crazy, because, like, look, here's the thing, like, not, yeah, fax machines are, like, obsolete. Like, you do not need a copier in your house. You can take a picture. There's also apps that, like, scan in documents for, like, I don't know, $11 a year or whatever. But there is nothing that really replicates, like, I have to print this thing out, and it doesn't have to be, like, crazy fancy. You know, I don't have to, like, make a copy of it after I print it out. But, like, nothing has been able to solve the problem of, like, oh, I have to return something to Nordstrom, or I have to, you know, return something to Amazon, or I have to bring a hard copy of my lease to, you know what I mean? Like, to do my taxes or whatever. There's, like, no actual replacement. And then it becomes this horrible black cloud on your to-do list.
That you, like, you never not think about somehow.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wait, I really don't want to think about this anymore.
And you're like, oh my God, like, this is no longer. I also have, like, PTSD about my printer, like, past, because I was always the kid, like, the printer would always jam, and then my dad would yell at me for some reason, like, not my siblings, just me. It was like, Caroline, what'd you do? I was like, I wasn't even in the room with the printer. So every time, like, and there are times where this printer jams because it's a $70 printer, and then I get this, like, the sweats about it. But it's like, it's just there, and when you want to send something, you can. And especially now, trying to save the post office and also like voting by mail, like there are forms, there are things that are going to become like halfway to digital, you know, like, oh, we can do it online, yeah. but you still have to have the like form in your hand. And that's where this is going to come in handy.
Totally.
You deserve it. Wow. You wrote a book. Buy a printer. Like, live a little.
I'm influenced. I think I deserve a printer.
You really do. It's going to change. I never even thought to recommend this, but I also realized, like, yeah, this is how, this is, like, one of those things that I think stresses a lot of people out and people forget. Like, you can just buy a printer. Just do it. Just buy a printer.
Totally. Wow. I feel lighter already knowing right? that like a printer could come to my home like tomorrow.
And then it's all right. It's all uphill from here. And now I'm going to order the note cards because I feel like it's time. I also have friends who are so, maybe you are this friend to people, but do you have friends who are like so good at sending mail and remembering birthdays and like every time, is that you?
Sometimes it hasn't been me for the past like 6 months. But sometimes I'm really good. I mean, and with the people that I'm like very intimately close with, yes. But like one of my best friends, Jordan, she every year she makes custom socks that have like really cute puns on them about feet. And so like the ones that she made for New Year's like this past year said like, I hope you have a totally great year, like TOE. Oh. And last year she was like only giving them to people who lived in LA, which is where she lives, I think. Like, I think she was only giving them to people in LA, but, and then because of like, you know, cost and time or whatever, but then she like had all these extra ones. And so she was like, she like was sending them to people. And so she sent one to me, she sent some to me and Maxwell, and we just got them today. And she had written like a really sweet note in there that was just like totally not, did not need to be there, but like just a very thoughtful extra touch. And she is like 100% that person. And it's just like a really nice thing to do.
I aspire to be her, especially making socks with feet puns on them. That's like levels above my skill set.
Yeah, it's really funny. And just like, they're like the socks that you would wear to like pat around in your pajamas too. Like they're like really like high mm-hmm. and like not super, you know, fashion forward, I would say.
I'm not into fashion.
I love them so much.
Before we wrap up, I need to know, just because this is a question I've been asking everybody, because I'm personally invested in these answers and interested. Have you picked up any hobbies during quarantine that you're really into? Like, did you teach yourself how to do anything? I mean, look, yes, you had a book come out. Like, big deal. Probably took a lot of time. But, like, did you have time between job and book to like, get into anything new, and what was it?
I'm trying to think. No, the short answer is no. I have not picked up a new hobby or a new skill or done anything like super productive other than like meet my deadlines and do my work, which I feel like is extremely, extremely hard to do these days.
Correct.
But I will say that the one thing that has brought me like real joy that I did not do before were like online dance classes. Like I try to do 305 Fitness, which is like free on YouTube. I try to do that like a couple times a week. Wow. And it has been like a real sense of joy for me. Like the founder, her name is Sadie. She like leads these like very funny dances that you can even do if you're not coordinated at all. Like I am, super not coordinated. And it's just like a nice adrenaline rush or endorphin rush, not adrenaline. And it takes like 30 minutes and it just makes me feel good.
I should do that. I like really like the first week I was like, yeah, working out. And now I'm like, whatever. But like I did 305 Same. In person once and I was like dying. Like
I did. Yes. The in-person classes are very hard. She's not there in your living room. So it's like it's just very forgiving. And she's like she's very nurturing in the dances where she's just like, you're gorgeous. You do it. Like you look amazing. Like if you can't, you know, do the full thing, don't like take Great. A break.
I'd be like, okay, Zadie, no problem. I'm gonna go
exactly.
Sit down
like that's what I need. And so that has been really nice, I would say. And we've been like, we have a little deck here in our Brooklyn apartment, mm-hmm. which is incredible. And we've just been barbecuing like crazy. So that's been another thing. But like, no, I have not like, you know, like, I don't know, learned how to like, I don't know. What are people saying? Like, what can you even do?
I think like the first 3 weeks, everyone was like on, you know, like,
making bread and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like sourdough, I'm learning how to knit. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And like now, and like Animal Crossing. And I feel like now I'm like, what's everyone doing? And everyone's like, I'm watching TV. Like, yeah, I'm reading books. Yeah.
Watching a lot of TV. I did make like one loaf of challah, and that was like really exciting. And I was like, I'm going to become the person who makes challah every weekend and like celebrate Shabbat. I have not made it since. do you have anything new that you're doing?
No. I did a lot of like, we have a big backyard, so we did a big garden. But Dan sort of leads the way on that, because I don't really get, like, I overwater, I underwater. I killed a fiddle leaf fern like immediately after procuring it. And it's so funny, like when you Google like, why is my plant dying? It's like you either overwatered it or underwatered it. It's either getting too much sun or not enough sun. Like, hope this helps. And you're like, no. Okay. I didn't know.
Wait, I have a genius, I think, idea for an app that I would love somebody to make.
Uh-huh.
So, because Maxwell, my partner, is like the plant guy in our apartment. And we have like a little garden too, that with like some tomatoes and peppers. It's all like burned up and dying and like doing poorly this year. And like, right, we're fine with it, whatever. But we always talk about like, how amazing would it be if you could just take a photo of like your plant and send it to like the plant doctor, like in an app, and they could just like tell you what was wrong with it.
That doesn't exist yet.
If it does, I would love to know about
me
it.
Me too.
I haven't been able to
if
find
it doesn't.
I also haven't, searched that hard for it. So if it exists, I'm sorry, but I would love to know about it.
That's a brilliant idea. If anyone knows of anything like that, that exists, please tell us about it. But also if anyone doesn't know about it, it's her idea. You can't take it. This is
no, please take it. Okay. I don't need any credit, but wow. It's like we had these like cherry tomatoes that had like dark circles on the bottom, and like I took a photo last summer of them and like posted it on Instagram, and I was like, does anybody know what's wrong with this? And my cousin, who is like a landscape architect and I guess like an extraordinary gardener, also was like, oh, obviously that's blossom end rot. And I was like, don't know what that is. Like, never heard
obviously
of it.
Yeah,
obviously. Looked it up, and it was like, oh yeah, that's like totally what it is. And I wish I just like had that for all my plants on demand. Like, yeah,
that's it's a really good idea. I'm thinking about, I should like get my father-in-law set up with like some sort of like, you know, ex Uber employee, because, and like build this app together, because he's a botanist. So like,
cool.
Mm-hmm, so he like builds greenhouses he built his greenhouse and he's in there all the time. And he breeds orchids. Like, he's really good. But we always like that's sort of our version, is we send pictures. But Dan is like too proud to do it, because men. And but I'm like, I'll do it. I don't care. Like, no one thinks I can grow anything. But like, yeah, I would love someone like telehealth, but for plants.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure it would be Americanized immediately, and it would like come with like an insurance package, and you like can't get it unless you have insurance.
And all the plant influencers would like be like just absolutely like gorgeous, regal, like, you know,
hot
queens,
hot plants. I feel like that if the Sill could do like a spinoff of that, I would pay for sure. That's a really great idea. Yeah, planting and. No, that's it. I toy with getting a dog, and that's about it. My big hobby is like looking at Pet Finder at dogs.
Same.
You guys have pets or no?
No, but my sister has a dog, and we're on the photo stream, so I feel like, you know,
it's just like cousin.
She's like the perfect dog. She's just an incredible, incredible specimen, and every moment with her is a joy, but like, I don't want to clean up her poop, so it's fine.
Yeah, I get that. I think also California weather has lent itself for me thinking it's a good idea, because like all weather is the same, but I like in New York, like, remember those cold, dark, snowy, rainy days, you have to like drag the dog outside and they're like mad at you.
Well, we're moving to Boston just for like a couple months. Just for a couple of months, and everyone keeps being like, oh, Boston's like a great place for a dog, like, you guys should get a dog. And I'm like, we're not gonna like get a dog just because we're like moving to a new place for
temporary.
A couple months.
We'll be back. New York is like anything. New York is difficult if you're not like insanely rich and can like afford to make it convenient for yourself, and this goes for dog owners too.
Yeah,
cats are easy though sometimes. Wow, I feel like we covered so much. Now I'm buying note cards. You're buying a printer. We're saving the post office.
I also feel like I could keep talking about all this stuff forever.
Me too. I feel like we'll stop recording to like save the episode, but like you and I will just keep talking on the phone.
I love it.
Jessica Goodman, the author of They Wish They Were Us, it's out right now. Do you have an indie store you want to shout out where people can order the book?
Yeah, Greenlight in Brooklyn is my fave. It's my local, and I will be signing books there and at Books Are Magic. So if you want signed copies, you can order from there and just put a little note that says, like, please ask Jess to sign this for whoever. But yeah, support local, support indie. If you have a favorite one in your neighborhood, go for that. They're the best. They're the lifeblood of our communities.
Awesome. Such a good book. Everyone needs to read it before the show comes out, and then we can have long discussions, like the same way we talked about Gossip Girl, about the show. And just please enjoy the cover for how beautiful it is. Jess, thank you so much for coming. Long time in the works.
I know. This is such a treat. I'm so happy to be here.
You were great. This was a great episode. Remember, you can follow G Thanks Just Bought It at G Thanks Just Bought It Pod on Instagram, or there's a G Thanks Facebook group if you search G Thanks Just Bought It, and that's exciting. So close to swipe up, you guys, and then I feel like my life's gonna change. Like, I really feel it. It's real. It's gonna happen, and I'll never forget where I came from before that. Anyway, we will see you guys next week for another episode.